Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hello, and welcome to Your Family Dog. I'm Julie Fudge-Smith, and I'm here with Colleen Pilar. And today, we're doing a question and answer session. We have several questions from listeners, and if you have a question, we would love to hear from you. You can call it in at 614-349-1661 or email us at feedback@yourfamilydogpodcast.com. So our first question was from a woman who has some issues with her golden retriever. And this is what Ginger had to say. My 4-month-old golden retriever has been showing some aggression with some of his chew treats, running away or growling with a tense posture. I know resource guarding can become a serious concern, and I'd love to hear some best practices to make my pup feel comfortable around me when enjoying his treats. So what do you have to say about that, Colleen?
I love this question because she's addressing it so early.
Yes.
Frequently, people don't realize that this is a problem, and they see, you know, the puppy running away with something. In this case, a chew treat. We don't typically chase our dogs down with chew treats, but if they have, you know, a stick or something that we were worried about them having, and we chase them down and go after them, and we develop a bigger problem before anyone realizes maybe this is an issue. So the fact that Ginger was able to catch on so quickly that her puppy has some signs of resource guarding is A, hugely important because she's watching body language, and B, so nice that it's young enough that we can really start playing with this a little bit.
Right. Oh, I agree. So, I couldn't agree with you more that the earlier you work on this, the less of a problem it's going to become.
Yes. And resource guarding is common in it's common in many, many dogs. It's common in people too. It's not this unnatural behavior. But certainly many breeds have a tendency toward it that is stronger than in some other breeds. So golden retrievers, it's not an uncommon trait.
No, it's not.
So seeing signs at 4 months old means that we do want to be addressing it now so that we can head it off. So all of that's really good. The first thing I would say is we want her puppy, exactly what she said, she wants her puppy to feel comfortable around her when he's enjoying his treat. So how do we do that? We do that by not making him feel like anything's going to be taken from him.
Correct.
And the easiest way to do that is to have good things happen for puppies who are chewing treats. So if he's lying somewhere chewing a treat and you just walk by and toss a little bit of chicken toward him, he's like, yay, person came over and I have my chew bone and a piece of chicken. Wow, that's amazing. As opposed to person came over and maybe I have to share my chew bone and I don't want to. That's a state. So that piece of creating this, someone approaching you means something good, is probably the very, very first step.
I agree. Then the other thing that I would also do too is that I want my puppy to feel comfortable when, no matter what he's holding, whether it's something valuable or not. So I don't want it to be transferred. If I'm feeling a little defensive about my chew toy, maybe I need to feel a little protective about my ball. So we mm-hmm. don't want that to start leaching into other areas. So one of the things that I would also recommend she do is doing some trading. So
absolutely.
That when maybe he's got a tug toy, we hold another tug toy and I'll play with this tug toy with you if you drop this one. And so, or you have the tug toy, I'll give you a biscuit. You drop the tug toy, you get a piece of chicken. So all these things, these trading back and forth of toys, of treats for toys, of things, good things happening, sort of appearing, bones raining from the sky while I'm chewing on my treat, are all ways of letting your dog know that interacting with you doesn't mean that things are going to be taken away from you. In fact, we're going to share them. The other thing is I would say, too, is I'd love the fact that you mentioned chicken around a chew toy, because one of the things you need to think about here is actually trading up or making sure that what you are offering is more valuable than what you have. In one of our last podcasts, I talked about Bingley with finding the dead groundhog, the frozen dead groundhog, and bringing it to me, and I was not going to get into a tug of war with him. And a frozen dead groundhog is pretty valuable to a dog, but his tennis ball was more valuable. So knowing what he loved, knowing what your puppy loves, you can use that in order to discourage the resource guarding and encourage trading or giving things up. I have a blog on that. This for That is what I call it. We'll put that on the show notes. Is there anything else you'd like to add about that, Colleen?
Yes. Trading is a skill that we want all dogs to know. Absolutely all dogs should know about trading. And it's not that hard to teach, but it takes a little effort. You have to set it up, and because you do need to be trading up. And for some things, I really like to teach it in which you give me what you have, I give you what I have, and then I give you back what you had.
Right.
And we might do it a couple of times. And so the message is I'm a safe custodian for some things. It's not like it's going away forever. It's going away for now. And sometimes, yes, it is going away forever. But if we're practicing in the very beginning and we have, you know, dirty sock, that's probably not going to hurt the dog unless the dog is a real ingester. So I can have the dog trade me. I'll give you a treat. You give me a sock. And then I let the dog take the sock again. And we do that a couple of times before the sock magically disappears. That's important. Because I don't want a dog who has something and goes, oh, Colleen's in the room. I better run and hide with it. I better go away because she's going to chase me down and take it. So years ago, I had a client who would bring in, you know, sticks and things from the yard. And her family would just see, oh, she's got a stick again. And they would chase after her. And she would be uncomfortable with that. She liked her stick. She'd found it. It was precious. And so yes. She learned to sort of run and hide and evade. And it just got harder and harder and harder. And she's going under the dining room table and she's hiding behind the couch. And they were getting so frustrated. And so we were talking about trading. And they said, I don't have time to teach that. I was like, but you have time to run all over your house chasing after a dog with a stick? So having the ability to trade back and forth and making things a game and calm and relaxed, what you wind up with is a dog who finds something and then brings it over to you and goes, hey, I found this. Is it valuable? Is it worth Is it worth a trade? And that's a really good thing because that is sort of the reverse of this body language that Ginger mentioned with the running away and the tense posture. Instead, we have a dog going, look what I found. I found a pen on the floor. Is that valuable? Yes, it is.
It is.
Thank you so much for bringing it to me.
Rather than chewing it on the white rug, which is what my Shih Tzu did one time. So yes, that is the, I was going to say, I like the trading back and forth. I had, when I was training a service dog and he had a rawhide chew, he was getting a little too comfortable with. So I got another one. And we just traded back and forth and back and forth until the final time I gave it to him, the one I gave to him at the end had peanut butter on it.
Mm-hmm.
So he learned, wow, I play this game of going back and forth. If I give this up, it might actually come back to me even better.
Yes.
And
that's a really good tip and a really good point, but that is something I would only do with a dog who showed lower levels of resource guarding. So we are talking, in this case, you know, Ginger's question is about a four-month-old puppy, and the dog you were working with you totally knew and were comfortable with. So more serious resource guarding, you do want to be very careful with some of these high-value trades. We start with low stuff and work our way up.
Absolutely. And if your dog is actually showing some severe aggressive behavior over something such as, you know, lunging and biting to protect this is not something that you can probably do on your own. This would require the help of a trainer or a behaviorist. This is really, so what we're talking about here is preventing and working with a dog that has very, very low level, because resource guarding can become very serious.
Yes,
it can be endangering to the person. So,
yes.
That's something to keep in mind, that if it's developed into a real serious problem, you probably need some additional professional help.
Yeah. So if you see any signs in your puppy, be like Ginger and take action early on. That's fantastic. I'm delighted that she's starting.
I was too. All right. So next question, Colleen.
The next question was from a listener about they have been cooking bacon lately. And a couple of times the bacon has gone from just about perfect to, oh no, the fire alarm. And their dog is now starting to show extreme signs of fear of any cooking going on in the kitchen. Not just bacon, just anything. Somebody is near the stove and making noise, and the dog is trembling and worried and really stressed out. So Julie, what would you say to a person where it started as a noise phobia and is now sort of generalizing into a big issue? What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts on that is that obviously the noise was traumatic to the dog, because one of the problems with trauma is it becomes pervasive. It becomes pervasive over time, that it lasts a long time, and it can also become pervasive and that it will leach into other areas. And yeah. This is a pretty classic sign of that, that the dog was, okay, originally I was scared of the smell of bacon. Now I'm kind of scared of the kitchen. Now I'm, you know, this is getting kind of pervasive. So one of the things you need to help the dog is to feel safe and comfortable. So one of the things you're going to want to try and do is really prevent the fire alarm from going off.
Yes.
And I was talking to someone the other day. I don't remember who it was, but I did look it up. There is a very specific kitchen smoke detector that is a lot more sensitive, and that it doesn't go off with normal food cooking, but will go off when there's a real fire. So I know they have them at Home Depot and I think on Amazon, and we'll get a link to those. So that might be something to start with to prevent this from happening again, so the dog's not caught off guard, because that noise going off all of a sudden is really scary, and it's intended to be scary to get your attention. In fact, I had one that my handyman had programmed saying, "Julie, evacuate, evacuate." Thank you very much. My smoke alarm is yelling at me. But in addition to that, in order to prevent, what we need to do is take care of the dog now. The first thing I think I would do is, in addition to the changing out the smoke alarm, is the dog needs to learn that the kitchen is safe again. Mm-hmm. So you need to provide sort of a safe haven or a way in which the dog feels safe. So I might start with just lots of treats in the kitchen. We walk through the kitchen. You take a step into the kitchen, you get a treat. You take two steps in the kitchen, you get two treats. But really allow the dog to understand that going into the kitchen is going to be a good thing. Mm-hmm. And that I would also, too, if they venture into the kitchen and somebody's standing by the stove, I'd be tossing a lot of treats to the dog, even if no cooking is going on. And so I would gradually begin to help the dog feel safe again in the kitchen. But the other thing that I might do is that in the kitchen, when I know I'm going to cook, maybe that's the time for the dog to be in the backyard or in another room with a tasty Kong so that he doesn't have to experience cooking going on. And that maybe the next thing I would do is that instead of cooking at the stove, have the dog in there when we're preparing food that doesn't require the stove. So sort of in allowing the dog to have a say as to when I go into the kitchen and when I don't. And that anytime I go into the kitchen, I get rewarded. If I decide to leave, that's okay too. If I may come back in, good things are going to happen. And this would be another time when I would probably pair the kitchen with something really wonderful. Yes. Braunschweiger or chicken or something that the dog doesn't normally get, but is really quite rewarding, so that when you make that effort to overcome your fear, I'm going to reward you well for it. Right. So what do you think of that?
That's what we were talking about when I was talking to this listener, that the concept of fear being sticky.
Yes.
It just started with one thing and now it's carrying over. And so we were talking about some of these pieces that you've just said about sort of creating new associations and positive associations and ways to relax in the kitchen, that the kitchen means good things for you, not the kitchen means bad things for you. But sound-based phobias can be tricky. They can take a while. So we really want to be very careful as much as we can. And I know it's hard, but we want to make sure that alarm doesn't go off again, you know. So changing your batteries before they need to be changed so it doesn't do the beep in the middle of the night when I'm getting a little low, or any of those other things, because it starts becoming this thing where your dog is walking around worrying about everything, and home needs to be a safe place.
Right. Well, the other thing you could also do too, depending on where the smoke alarm is, you could always just put a sticky note on your stove that says, "Turn off smoke alarm." Mm-hmm. So that before you start cooking, you go, and my ceilings are kind of high. I have to take a broom and punch the little thing, but it opens up and the battery compartment opens up. So the smoke alarm is turned off. And then we finish cooking and Julie takes the broom and pushes it back up again. So,
well, there you go. It's magic. And we teach our dogs that people banging on the ceiling with a broom is a good thing.
That's
There's
right.
chicken when I bang on the ceiling.
So that would be one thing they could do too, is just put a sticky note on the refrigerator or on the stove that says, "Turn the smoke alarm off before cooking."
Yes.
But in addition to that, you're still going to have to do all those counter conditioning things and all those things to reassure the dog, making the the kitchen a happy place for them to be again. And this may take a long time.
Right.
It may take a very long time.
That's the tricky part of this. Yeah. But it's worth doing because it's worth cooking.
It is worth cooking.
Cooking and eating at home. It's good. Okay, so our third question comes from a listener named Hannah. And it says, I love your podcast and want to thank you for sharing your wonderful tips and tricks with your listeners.
Well, you can stop right there.
I have a question for both of you. My husband and I recently moved into our first home and are in love with the area. It's on a quiet cul-de-sac with a nice yard for a 30-pound year-old puppy, Kateri. The one problem we have is with our neighbor's dogs. We quickly realized the issue when we were out with our Kateri and three huge dogs ran to the fence, growling and barking at her. One of them was about to jump the incredibly short fence if we hadn't taken Kateri inside immediately. It was scary, to say the least. We've adjusted our behavior to protect Kateri from these encounters by looking outside before taking him out and by using constant supervision, taking Kateri out in the front yard instead of the back. We can't feel completely safe in our backyard. The aggressive dogs are always outside and cut our time short if we go out there. We will also have a newborn baby in a month, and I'll never feel safe out there with him either. So my question is, how do you two deal with aggressive dogs? How do you keep your dogs and family safe in those situations? Should I approach the owner and voice my concerns? The owner's always outside with his aggressive dogs, but when they start threatening Kateri, all he does is yell their names 100 times while looking at his phone, with no response from the dogs. He's not too concerned, which makes it more frustrating. We were really looking forward to having a relaxing outdoor space for our family, but now we're unsure of how to achieve that. This could also apply to dealing with aggressive dogs at dog parks or on sidewalks, etc. We are our dogs' protectors, and they trust us to be there for them. So how can I make this situation a better situation for my sweet Kateri? Thanks so much. So, Julie, how do we fix other people's behavior?
Oh, this is such a difficult topic. That therein is the rub, is that I can't fix other people's behaviors. I can't make him a responsible dog owner. I can't, you know, I can throw treats all I want to his dogs, but that's not going to change their behavior. They're going to feed off of one of there's just so many levels here of what's going on and what's wrong with this problem. But you can't fix another person and you can't fix another person's dogs. And that is so frustrating. So what boils down to is what can I do
right
to keep my dog and my family safe? She could, and it might be worth it, to actually go over and talk to the owner. I'm not sure how much of a positive response she's going to get from him. I'm not sure that he's going to be able to, really hear what she has to say, or that he's going to be concerned about what she has to say. He's not giving any indication that he does. On the other hand, if she goes over and says, you know, and she asks for him to help, there might be a little bit of a reprieve.
And he does go outside with them all the time. So that at least is a sign that he is caring enough to do that. I mean, he's not just letting the dogs out and leaving them out
there. Right. And then he's aware. I imagine he's probably pretty aware of the problem here. He just doesn't know what to do about it. That doesn't mean he's going to change. But the other thing is, unfortunately, what I think the best solution to this whole problem is would probably be a visual barrier. Meaning a privacy fence between you and your neighbor.
Right.
Because the visual barrier preventing his dogs from seeing your dogs or your child might be the thing that is needed to, you know, stop this from being an issue. That might actually be a motivation to the owner. She says, we have to put up a privacy fence because we feel unsafe. That might be a motivator to him. It might not. Who knows? I can't predict this man's behavior. I find this to be a very frustrating and difficult decision or predicament to be in, because I'm not sure there's all that much you can do except protect your own dogs and family.
Right. And
what about
and
you,
she
Colleen?
She described the fence as being incredibly short.
Short.
So, yeah, I think the very first thing we need to do if we're going to be using this backyard is make a fence that's going to make you feel safe. That's frustrating, because you're like, why do I have to spend the money because your dogs are scaring me? But it does come down to in life, we really, the only behavior we can control is our own, and we don't even do that very well. So
yes,
when we're looking at the solution to this problem is if you would change your behavior or you would control your three dogs' behavior, that is really multiple steps away from the area that we can honestly control. So I do like the other adjustments she's made. They're probably not comforting to her, but, you know, always checking outside before she takes her dog out, supervising her dog when her dog is out there and going out in the front instead of the back. All of those work well. And if the neighbor is receptive, and he may be, but it's a very difficult conversation to have. But I do love that he's out there with his dogs. That is a very good sign. Then we could have some sort of, you know, communication about, if my dog is out, could you please wait until I go in? If your dogs are out, I'll try to wait until you go, you know, that kind of thing, so that we're not setting it up.
Right.
Because I'm sure he doesn't mean for his dogs to frighten her, but he just got three dogs running around in the yard. And so she needs to do what she can to make herself feel safe. And particularly with the baby coming, I'm sure she's heightened anxieties.
Right. It could be, too, that he's so used to the dogs, he doesn't hear how scary it is. And he may just need a reminder that this is kind of scary. And if it's a low fence, you might think, well, we could just put up a higher fence. But then it sounds to me that if you were to put even just a higher fence, like a split rail fence with mesh, the dogs can still see. It's still a visual issue. And so that's why I say privacy fence, because I think what you really need to be thinking about is blocking that visual that triggers these dogs to bark. But talking to your owner might be a place to start too. I don't know how old these dogs are. I don't know how long they've been practicing this behavior.
Right.
And that all makes it much more difficult. I don't know how much they feed off of one another, if he lets them out one at a time, if this is not as much of an issue. But once again, those are all things we can't change.
Right.
So.
And I think that's sort of the overriding theme of today's podcast is that problems are tricky. And there are all sorts of variables that come into play. So our answer for the first question about the golden retriever puppy might have been different if the dog was older. And our answer for the second question about the fire alarm depends on how well this dog is going to bounce back from the stress and other pieces, and how much you can manage the cooking and all of those pieces. And our answer here is, how can you set yourself up? It depends on your house, your dog, your neighborhood, your abilities. And that's always going to come into play, because we're talking about living beings. So then it's the number of variables in play complicate the question every time.
That's right. And certainly with the next door neighbor, three dogs complicates it more than three times.
Yes. Yeah. But so that's at least a starting point. So hopefully that will give Hannah a place to start and things to think about as she addresses this issue. And we're so delighted that we've got some questions from
we would like more.
Ginger, Amy, and Hannah this week. So thanks for that.
Thank you. Yes. And I think that pretty much wraps it up for this week, Colleen, and we will see you next week. Just one note to our listeners, if you like us and you're listening to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, please leave a review and let us know what you think, and because that helps us to get more listeners, and that's what we'd like to do, is reach more people. So if you like us, please let us know, and we will see you next week. Thanks, Colleen.
See you later.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.